Well, week nine of college football starts. A little slow, I'm not going to lie. Brent Rollins joins me. He writes for PFF and does stuff with Rivals. Brent, it was a little slow. And then we get into some elimination games. And how about backup quarterbacks for top 15 teams fighting to get in the playoffs? I mean, come off and serve huge roles. But I think we got to start with A&M. I mean, that just happened and is actually just happening right now as we speak.
And still happening.
It's finishing. Yeah. But like, yes. I had all these notes, man, and I was locked and loaded and I was ready to talk about.
Did you tear them up?
No, I didn't tear. I didn't tear, but I'm like, LSU 17-7, 8 minutes and change left in the third quarter. Everything going their way. Kyle Field is quiet, which is one of the best atmospheres in all of college football. And then Nussmeier, who I've bragged on and talked about how good he is, scrambles to his left and bit off more than he can chew and tried to make the big play when he didn't need to. They get the turnover. The place goes nuts. Insert yep. Marcel Reed. And next thing you know, you look up and this stuff went bananas. 21-0 run in 9 minutes of time. Like, it literally went from A&M looked like they were dead in the water to insert Marcel Reed, and now A&M looks like the best team in the country.
Well, what two things with it is LSU could not run the ball.
They don't even try. Like,
and they didn't even really try.
They don't even try. And
that was when you're playing in this league, the SEC, you have to have some level of running because they missed the field goals, and then another one, they didn't even get an opportunity because the holder got hit upside the shoulder. But in that type of environment on the road, you have to have some level of running game, and they didn't have any. And then once Reed comes in, the beauty of it is the LSU was so disciplined defensively up until that point. And then as soon as you insert the running element at the QB position, yep. Everything opened up. Everything.
Yeah. And listen, he's already played this year. You know, he served a couple weeks. He beat Arkansas in a close game. So he's gotten some reps, which I think is good. Yeah. LSU was not prepared for him. Like that's not who they prepared for. They weren't prepared for all the zone read stuff, and it worked like crazy. And you could tell Marcel Reed knows how to run it. Like he holds on to it late. Later, you could see that they inverted it and he ran inside. Like, he's just got a good mm-hmm. feel. And I love, by the way, LSU goes down the field and scores. And what happens? They come out first down and 10, and they throw a bomb deep shot, which, by the way, Connor Wigman didn't throw all game. He didn't let it rip and throw one deep shot, and I think they needed to. And then they go down the field and score again. So, obviously, it was a huge game. Whoever lost this game, I think we pretty much felt like was out of the college football race, and whoever won was in first place. I just didn't foresee this happen. And Nussmeier collapses. You know, he throws a bunch of picks. And here's what matters most to me. When you talk about the run game, Brent, it's not because Nussmeier isn't good enough to drop back and throw the ball a bunch. No. It's because now A&M knows you're not running the football. And when they know you're not running the football, they can do all that exotic stuff and show man and play zone because they know you're throwing the football. And they fooled him. They fooled him a bunch of times. He made the one really bad mistake rolling to his left, but the one he throws to his right was because of coverage, disguising coverage. The one he throws back over the middle was because they rushed off the edge and then sagged in the middle and covered the back. So – very good deception, but you're right. Missed opportunities. Like, if I'm LSU, I'm going, I should have been up 21 at the half. Like, should have built this big lead. Two missed field goals. A bad snap on a whatever the crap that was on a field goal when they weren't even ready. The crowd played a role, but unbelievable turn of events. And I don't think A&M has a quarterback controversy anymore. I think they're certain that that's Marcel Reed's job now moving forward.
And I thought that, I forget what week it was. I think when they played Missouri. Yeah, because Missouri was ranked ninth at the time. Looking at the tape up to that point, he just looked like the better player. But then Wigman comes out and plays against Missouri and has a phenomenal game against Missouri. And you're like, okay, that's their guy. He's their starter, all that sort of stuff. But what he brings to their offense, and then obviously what they can do defensively along the defensive line, they covered well enough in this game. And then once the onslaught came, they started getting the turnovers. But
they're
in the driver's spot in the SEC. That's for sure.
Well, and here's why they're better too. They're better because they're not a great offensive line. They've got a couple good backs. Their receivers don't get a bunch of separation. But now when you insert a quarterback that can run the football and you get that advantage up front, by the way, he can't just run the football. That dude's got gas. Like,
yes.
When he hits the gas, he's moving faster than everyone on the field. You could tell, which was crazy, the speed difference. But now, guess who the offensive coordinator is for A&M calling plays? Colin Klein. That's what he came from. That's what he did at Kansas State. That's the system he grew up in. And so I think it meshes perfectly for what they do. And A&M, you're right, in the driver's seat. Again, they play Texas late in the year, and they play that at Kyle Field. So yes. We thought it'd be a great season for A&M to start the season. We talked about them a lot, and I think this further solidifies that. We want to go
South
next.
I'll say South Carolina, though, next week becomes at South Carolina. It's always an interesting game. We've talked about that before, but like at South Carolina versus New Mexico State, at Auburn, and then Texas at home. Like, and the other thing, it doesn't necessarily eliminate LSU from, I think, going to the SEC championship game in any way. Like, this game could end up being a rematch with how all this stuff works out.
Hey, everybody, real quick, we have something that we love to invite you into that you could help us with. It's called the Banquet of Blessings, November 24th, PollockFamilyFoundation.com. You can find all the details, but we feed the homeless. We serve those in need. We're going to bus some in, and we're going to basically open the doors, throw a huge Thanksgiving feast, and along with that will come so many things with coats and hats and scarves and all kinds of stuff that we're going to give to them. It's an awesome event. We would love to have you guys support in any way, shape, or form.
Next one, backup quarterback, part due. Penn State going on the road, getting the win at Wisconsin when it was not looking good. Aller goes out of the game, and you're like, uh-oh, they can't do anything. And then the kid from Wisconsin throws him the ball, and then it changes.
Yeah, and by the way, if Penn State, if I'm a Penn State fan, I'm so sick and tired of this. I'm so sick and tired of bad starts. Like, they start bad every single game. It is very consistent, and it's so weird because – they're so talented, and they've finished so strong against everybody they've played. They haven't had an opportunity to start good, and they didn't again. Now Aller did. I mean, he was dang near perfect. Yeah, I mean, he was really, really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But interesting thing about Penn State, this is going to be very controversial because I think Aller's playing really good football. I think Aller's poise has grown so much. He was super efficient. He knows when to scramble, knows when to move his feet by time. I think Penn State's better with Bo Prabula. And I've already said that with
Trace McSorley.
He's number nine
with the running ability.
He's got really good running ability. One thing that they've done a really good job with Penn State, they've played him a bunch. He was highly recruited. They've given him reps along the way. Colton Ecky gave him more reps this year, and they have the Wildcats and all the crazy stuff that they do with him. So he has a little bit of experience. I don't see an elite receiver for Penn State. I see an elite tight end, an elite tight end that can be moved around and used in a bunch of different directions. With that quarterback, what I've missed from Penn State is great running game. I have great running backs. I don't have a great running game consistently. I think you put this dude in there and you got another running back that now can you go, hey, look over here, kick in the face right here. Like, and then you got Ty Warren and the pieces that they have. Listen, what do you think about that, first of all? And then I want to get to another point too.
It's the dichotomy of all of these offenses is when you have a great quarterback, you might want to have really good receivers. Because that's going to be how your offense is driven. And we've talked about even Georgia's inconsistencies offensively. They don't necessarily have great receivers, but they got a great quarterback. So, all right, well, how do you make your running game better? Well, when you make your running game better through having a running quarterback. And with the tight end and the backs that Penn State has, the blend of having a quarterback that is a running threat. It's just, it makes you tougher to defend always. Dude,
and Koltunecki comes from Kansas and he had Daniels, bro. Daniels. And he knew how to use Daniels and he made it very hard to defend the whole field along with the gadgets. And you saw the, you know, the direct snap at the end of the game that was a touchdown run. Like, I'm not sure that's not the worst thing that could have happened to for Ohio State next week, because
that's interesting for that game, because now you've got the biggest game of your season. And that's a, now the key is Aller hurt completely where he cannot play, or is he, would he be able to play next week? And you've got to blend them both.
That, well, and if you've got a wounded, if you got a wounded Aller, I don't think that's a good idea. I obviously don't think it's a good idea anyways. And now, one more thing about Penn State. Penn State's defense, I think, is the fastest in the country. Like, I watch them run to the football. You go east to west on them, which Ohio State's going to try to do next week, because now we'll talk about the injury again to their left tackle. Going east to west is a problem, man. They flashed. You got 11 and 33 and 28. Now, 33 being hurt is a big deal for them. That is a huge deal for them.
He came back in the game.
He did, but and then he left immediately. But he pulled at his groin. Sutton did, and then you got Durant and Carter. Like, you just got a bunch of guys that fly around, make things happen. Their defense comes out in the second half and just dominates the football game. And so, you know, Penn State. Let's go now and turn the page, because they got to go to Columbus, and Ohio State played Nebraska today.
I think it's at home. I thought they had them at home.
They get them at home? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were
at home. Noon.
They were in Columbus today. So Penn State, one of the best atmospheres in all of college football, coming in. What, I'm going to let you go first. What did you see with Ohio State today?
Well, let's see. How do I put this? To me, lack of gumption, lack of guts, lack of wanting to be there.
So
that game to me was just, neither team. I was very frustrated watching that game, because neither team acted like they wanted to win the game. Like, Nebraska's running down and they're running screens and not pushing the ball down the field when they got to push it back. The only thing that changed the game was the whole targeting garbage again, that, and then stuff being thrown on the field. But you actually saw energy from Ohio State's players and running around. Like, that was the thing for me, where it's like, does anybody want to win the game? Some of the goal line stuff, like Nebraska's goal line stuff, just blah, meh, no creativity, no go for it. It was just frustrating to watch. And well, by the way, the only thing that mattered from the game was what you already mentioned, the next left tackle. Cause it's not always like, usually all these teams, especially the better teams like the Ohio States and, or the better, deeper teams, usually higher ranked teams, they can handle one. But when you get two to a unit, now you start getting a much greater effect in that injury issue.
Well, and they had already lost their left tackle the week before, the game before against Oregon. And then late in the game, they lose their second left tackle, which struggled all game. And let's call a spade, because we're gonna do that here. Like, you're gonna get it straight, no chaser. Ohio State got their butts kicked up front. Like, they got destroyed up front. Just go look at 9-0. You know, Big Hatchmaker and Big Nine. Gosh dang, both those boys.
Ty. His first name is Robinson. Ty Robinson.
Ty Robinson. Yeah. Both those boys ate. Like, they ate up front. They ate off the edges. You know, they went inside on the left tackle a lot. Got a ton of pressure. When they had time, though, it was no surprise. Jeremiah Smith, 60 yards. Yeah. Tate gets a 40-yard touchdown. Like, Ohio State's weapons are ridiculous. And when they have time, it's insane what those receivers can do on the outside to make big plays. So Ohio State's defense, very positive, very good. You know, you saw a little bit of the running game get going for Nebraska. You saw Raiola scramble a little bit. I will say this about Ohio State. If I've got concerns, cornerback out wide, man, we're handsy as crap. And we get PIs and we get holding calls. And, you know, it's consistently outside. So Nebraska trying to dump it on the perimeter, Ohio State tackled that the whole time. Try to run screens late in the game, Ohio State was on it. Their pass rush was pretty good. Their defense won them the football game. And that's a good sight, by the way. Great football teams find a way to win. when you don't play your best. And so I think Ohio State finding a way, but I think that Penn State next week, Penn State gets real. And it's going to be tough because they did not run. Ohio State could not run the football very well at all. And next week, can they do it against Penn State, who's got a bunch of dudes in there that can also play?
That felt like a typical Ohio State performance where they kind of sleep through an opponent they know they're better than. I mean, because Nebraska just took it on the absolute chin the week before against Indiana. And you just kind of show up.
Yeah.
And they responded.
And but Ohio State did too, right?
Eventually.
Yeah, Ohio State did too. So, yeah, I was not high on Nebraska after they gave up 450,000 points the week before. Like, it was tough to watch that Indiana game. By the way, Indiana wins again. And Indiana does exactly what they need to do to win football game. Justice Ellison, number 6, his numbers aren't silly, but he did everything he needed to do. Fell forward, made big runs. They ran the football. They got a big pick 6 early. Like, Indiana continues to be undefeated without their best player in Rourke at QB. Like, Cignetti is the coach of the year. I'm not hearing it from anybody else. Like, he's the coach of the year. You look at their schedule down the stretch, man, my goodness, Indiana's probably not going anywhere. It'll be interesting to watch them play against Ohio State, but I just love the way they elevated their team. Defense stepped up with several picks, a pick 6, and timely plays against Washington. So, Indiana, again, you deserve another salute. The Cignetti towels were pretty dope, swinging them around in the stadium, and that was.
Did you see the shirts? I think it was Coach Sig.
Coach Sig.
It looked like the old Marlboro things. First FBS team to start 8-0 without trailing at any point in the game in at least 20 years. I saw that stat David Hale tweeted. That's
with their with their backup quarterback. With their backup QB, and that was the most impressive part. Like,
because they ran it down their throat.
Jackson played really poorly to start. You could tell he was nervous, and then he started spreading the ball around. First thing they did was run him. Once they ran him, I think it kind of broke the seal. It kind of opened it up a little bit. But the physicality of guys like Justice, I mean, Ellison just – he took over. And I love what they said on the broadcast. They said he had offers to go elsewhere in the transfer portal. He sat down with Cignetti, and he said he looked in his eyes, and he was like, that dude had this, and he had me locked in, and that's why he committed, because he could have gone somewhere else. He could have taken the bag and gone to a different places, but he was like, that dude made me want to play for him. That says a lot about your coach, man.
And so I had to go run an errand in between the games today, and I was listening to the radio, and they interviewed one of the 6-year linemen, or one of the senior offensive linemen for Indiana. And they were like asking him, what was it about? And I didn't get the name, but what was it about Coach Sig that you felt that instantly how he grabbed the team? He said, it's his swag. That was the kid's answer. He said, the guy's got swag. And I'm like, okay.
And he's like 63, by the way. So,
yeah. So if a kid is saying that, the player, that's not normal. You know it. No, you know that it's real and it's legit. They have at Michigan State and then home to Michigan, at Ohio State is the big one. So, but still, even if that, to me, let them at 11-1 and their only loss is at Ohio State with the dominance that they've had. Now, they don't have a real sort of signature win, but.
And that would be crazy to watch the committee and how they measure that up. But, you know, it's crazy because Indiana, Oregon, and Penn State all don't play each other. So that's kind of weird. But when you look at Michigan, by the way, congratulations, big win over Michigan State, because I think they're going to a bowl now. They got Northwestern, so I know that's we're down to different things for Michigan this year, but that's a win. Hey, Sling T, Navy, all the excitement. Britt Rollins watched the tape of Navy offense. You talked to me about this spread. You talked to me about the shifts. You talked to me about the motions. Navy walked into that game, bro, and they go, this is real. What the heck is going? I mean, goodness gracious. Navy had 0 fumbles coming into the game.
Yeah.
They had 4 unforced fumbles.
Yeah.
Like, which means the player didn't touch the other player to force it. They were a nonprofit. They were giving it away like it was going out of style. They were not ready for that. And Notre Dame, by the way, keep looking at their schedule, you know, down the stretch. They're putting wins together. Does that A&M win look pretty good now for Notre Dame? I think that looks pretty dang good. And
yeah,
Notre Dame plays USC at the end of the year, which is not as fearful, but Notre Dame taking care of business, homie.
Well, the note I wrote from that, and one of the – this was outside of this being kind of a separation Saturday a little bit with some teams. I think Oregon separated themselves from just consistency. But the other note that I had, there are levels. They're just like high school, ninth grade to JV to varsity. There are levels in this game. And that game was evidence of that more than anything.
Well, I mean, again, nobody went to Navy. Nobody goes, hey, I'm going to Navy over Notre Dame, like to play football. I mean, that's, and you could see that. Riley Leonard and that offense has definitely changed completely to what they are. They're going to run the football with Jeremiah Love, who's an animal. Riley's going to run it. And then they're going to attack the middle of the field, those easy throws. They're not going to ask him to throw out wide. I got you to look up that heat map on PFF because you're the stat nerd. And I love seeing that kind of stuff. And then, you know, I love seeing it and then saying, well, how does the stats back it up? And you could see it. Yes. So still interested to watch Notre Dame. But the player for player, the physicality, and then just starting the game with Navy making mistakes. It made that game.
How Leonard is playing to me is the most important thing. Is the, you know, taking care of the football and, hey, this is not there. Next thing's not there. Okay, I'm going to go get five. I might get 15, but I'm at least going to go get five and get down. That to me is.
And sometimes he does, man, because he's a great athlete. But that you skipped over this real quick. I am not going to. I'm going to make sure I give. You said it was kind of blah, whatever. Like I. Nebraska, I love the way they competed today, though. Like, they went into the Shoe, and the place was rowdy, and they were, everybody was excited. I just, you know, Raiola is still learning; he's still growing. The receivers out wide don't make a lot of plays. He missed two opportunities again. He missed two wide open guys for touchdowns that could have made a difference. They got stopped 4th and 1 on the 1 yard line. They tried to, or 4th and 2. They tried to jump over the top. So. Like Nebraska, they had a bunch of chances to win this football game. They competed like crap. Their kicking game finally did something for them because I think their kicker was like 1 of 5 coming in. He goes
and 3 for 3.
And then
was on the money today.
Yeah, like they looked like a team that was ready to compete. They looked like a team that we thought they were going to be exciting. You know, they showed me that last week was kind of a blip, and I think they're more closer to the team they were today than they were last week.
Yeah, I agree. Other ranked matchups, like we kind of mentioned Oregon, I think, as a separator, just they look like one of the best, if not one of the two best teams in the country, or three. You know, they that's what they look like right now.
Yeah.
Playing efficient. Gabriel's there. And what's interesting, the Ferguson kid, the tight end being hurt, has opened the door for the Sadiq kid. Freak athlete. They talk about 10-600 or something like that.
10-7. Giving
the ball on jets.
Yep.
On jet sweeps. Like, because I think the coaches said he's our poor man's Brock Bowers. Like, you got an animal, like a guy like that, that now you, when you get Ferguson back with Stewart and Tez Johnson, like,
a lot of weapons. And I'm going to say this again, I'm sure, but like, it's just, we should do a tape. We should make ourselves do this. Like, it's so frustrating as a defensive guy. Like Gabriel gets the ball out so fast. Mm-hmm. And so you have to play the quick game. Well, and then you play the quick game and you get your hand in the cookie jar and they go over the top with Stewart, with Tez. And after the catch, Stewart and Tez. And then this Sadiq dude comes in and you give him a jet sweep and he goes 18. And then they have, when they put him out wide for bubbles, usually use the tight end as a big blocker. So the point man has to be physical. Well, now they drop him back and the receiver goes and blocks and he's such a freak athlete. It's crazy. So I think that they're in a good spot. I think Oregon definitely throttle down, hammer down, just extremely, extremely tough to stop. Got to give some love to Bama. I thought Bama adjusted for the first time that I've seen them really, really adjust in the last several weeks. And I say that they spit the ball in the perimeter to Law and Bernard a shoot ton. Like early and often, they spit it out wide. This is a team that lives on deep passes, and people have been wanting to Jalen Milroe to beat them, and they've been heating him up. They've been blitzing him more than I've ever seen him blitz, because usually when you blitz a young guy like he was last year, it I know this sounds crazy, but when you blitz a young guy, it makes the reads easier. It's man to man. It's not as fuzzy of a picture. But the problem is when he makes one guy miss, a lot of times he can take it to the house, but spit it on the perimeter really quickly, break tackles. Law did a good job of that, making plays. And then defensively, they played really, really well. Listen,
especially
I know Missouri.
Not good.
Missouri, by the way, I mean, it was a fun year. You're officially out. You've got two losses. By the way, what was the Missouri score with A&M? Because today
34 zip, 41-10, I think. So, yeah, that's 75-10.
That's disqualified. That you're disqualified. Yep.
They're on my list of out after this week.
Yeah, and we had 34, we said, coming into the week, right? 34 teams that were on the bubble.
Technically.
If y'all want to hit us with comments in the chat, we will try our best to get to them. You can hit – somebody said, I like this guy, Tyler. Thank you. Appreciate it. He said, hit the like button, everyone. Yeah. I don't know what that –
Tyler Belcher.
Tyler, I don't know how that works with the like button and stuff, but appreciate it. Appreciate you doing that. Vandy is here. Actually good, says Eric McCormick. I agree. I actually could make a case to you right now that Vandy outplayed Texas.
And they didn't play that great. They didn't play overly great.
They lost the turnover battle. Couldn't
run the ball overly well.
Yeah, that they had penalties that shot themselves in the foot, but Pavia is a freaking dog. I mean, that dude is a gam. He's a grown ace man. I mean, to me, it's the third and twos when he's gonna throw it and he pulls it and then runs it and he goes and gets 10. He goes in the tent, gets a knee brace, and then comes back out. I mean, he's got that it factor, man. He's just got, you know, he always grew up watching Johnny Manziel. And he's got a lot of that to him, man. He's just got the magic.
Same number.
That's why he wears it. But it's fun to watch him. But Texas
did what they had to do.
I have my concerns about Texas again too. I don't know if you do, but
yes.
Let me tell you why. I'll tell you why, and you can tell me if you agree or not.
Okay.
Brent, they consistently get penalties on offense. A bunch of false starts, always holding. Mm-hmm. They get themselves behind the sticks. So daggum much. They had another 10 penalties today. The running game has been non-existent. I mean, it just hasn't been. They use the perimeter throw game as their run game, and I know that's fine. But you saw with Georgia, if you can get lined up correctly and not get picked with all of their routes, and if you can tackle in space, which not everybody can, obviously that's a tough thing to be able to do, but. I mean, Vanderbilt did a really good job because I just love Vandy this year. I just love – they have literally built their whole team and said, what do we have? How do we win? You watch them every time, Brent, they run the play clock down to one. Like, they are trying to shorten every single game because they know they're at a talent deficiency than everyone else. They do the best job I've seen of getting, you know, third and medium – third and short because of their offenses, triple option-esque, QB run game-esque. And I saw a thing on the broadcast today. There's like 70% on third and 1-6. And that's because when it does break down, you got a guy at the quarterback spot that's unbelievable. Yeah. It's just an uncanny knack. So I'd love to see some of those things, interceptions with Ears. He also went 17 for 17 for a stretch. So he was hot. He was cold. But Texas definitely, obviously, the last 2 weeks hadn't been like they started the season.
I thought you were going to say the offensive line.
Well, they did. Yeah, they gave up four more sacks today.
Because Vanderbilt, especially in the second half, dictated everything for the most part of that game. It was way more physical and dominated the line of scrimmage, I thought, at least from their defensive standpoint, and slowed them down. Texas had a few big plays, but it's still a good, you know, in the end, with all this, winning and moving on is all that matters. Let's go back to one that we actually got to watch because the Titans took care of business early on Friday night. with Boise and UNLV.
The go-go offense for UNLV that wasn't go-go in the second half?
It completely shut down. I was 0 for 2. Actually, 0 for 3 this week, I think, in terms of semi-predicting games, because Syracuse decided to break any sort of in all records of throwing pick sixes.
That was unbelievably bad.
And gave it away. gave Pitt the game.
Ungood. Very ungood.
Like, very bad by Kyle McCord. And then Genty played through. You could tell he was hurting, and he played through it. And they got the lead, ran the clock out. Like, I will say, what's interesting to me watching, that was a high quality game.
Yeah.
That if you look at those two teams, because of the whole non-power four part of it. No, those teams were. There's a lot of guys on those teams that were just really good and will play at the next level players, but the Williams kid for UNLV, he's got skills. How did someone not see that and do that at another level? But no, Boise State kind of puts themselves, I think, very much in the driver's seat with that win.
By the way, you got a bunch of really good coaches in those matchups too, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got Cutter as an OC over there, who's a big name. Yep. You've got Barry Odom, who's a big name and has brought people with. There's a bunch of big names on the coaching staff. They're well-coached squads. I agree. And I liked, Boise State's got 2 5-plus sack guys that can get after the quarterback, mm-hmm. and they did a really good job with that. Genty was, yes, he was banged up, but he did what he needed to do down the stretch. How about this for stupid stats? That's the first game this season. We're at week 9. The first game this season, that bad mother shut your mouth did not have a 50-yard run.
That's amazing.
Just think about that.
His quarterback did.
Yeah, and I like their offense. Yeah, and he's good, by the way. Madison?
Madison.
He's got some good little arm angles to him. He can scramble. The tight end, Lauder, is really good, 85. He's a good football player. I think Boise's got some – they've got some good players. With Navy getting knocked off, Army still has to play Notre Dame, which doesn't bode if you saw that. And by the way, big help there for Notre Dame. If you're an Irish fan, playing an option team already, that's a good thing. You've already seen some of that stuff. Now, Army won't make that many mistakes.
Notre Dame way more prepared than any team that I'd watched on film playing Navy.
They were good.
For the combo of, hey, we're going to be in one set for one thing and then switch to another. SMU just won in overtime over Duke. So that actually sets up a pretty big matchup in the ACC next week with Pitt, who is still obviously undefeated.
Look it up for me real quick. Clemson and their schedule. When you look at Clemson's schedule now, because we were talking about Clemson not playing a lot down the stretch.
They have Pitt.
They have Louisville next week. Pitt. And then who else?
At Virginia Tech.
And at Virginia Tech, that's not a bad, 3 in a row. I think we're going to find out, about Clemson. They had their bye week this week.
Yep.
I mean, everybody, you watch Cade Klubnik, he looks like the real deal. He's definitely evolved and everything. But, when the bullets fly the fastest is when you figure out how good you are. So, I think playing some better teams in the future will definitely get a better indicator soon, though, from them.
You'll see it next week. Louisville hasn't lost every game they've lost. They're 5-3, and they've lost every game by 7 points. They're in every game.
I was talking to Khalil Barnes, the DB.
He was at the game Friday.
He was at the Titans game. I was talking to him about their quarterback. He was like, man, he's 56 years old. I was like, yes, he's been around for a while. But Tyler Shuck will make some of those throws that make your head spin. I mean, he can throw it at all these different angles. Quick trigger, been around the game, obviously, a long time. But what else do we miss, man?
All right, so I have to ask you. Did you see the thick six?
Which one was
Jabari Ritzy from UNC?
No, I did not see the thick six.
Oh gosh, you have to pull it up on your phone if you can.
Did you name it the thick six or did they call it the thick six?
No, I saw it on. I saw somebody call it on Twitter. But D lineman, he's 3 bills, great catch, and then takes it 84 yards.
Did he make anyone miss
to the house? And yes, oh yeah.
Oh,
big time play. Some other things, just random things I saw. I saw where UTSA was leading 35-7 at half and got beat by Tulsa 46-45. And then did you see the cow touchdown on the lateral?
Yes.
That was the other one.
I did see that
one. I think it gets recorded in the stat as the quarterback, I guess, has caught his own touchdown pass.
That's all. That's outstanding, by the way.
In a way.
Hey, congratulations, War Eagle. Finally, I think I saw a stat, by the way. I didn't get the exact numbers, but how stupid is this? Like, Auburn on the season is like plus 170 in the first three quarters. And then it was like negative, I think, 70-something in the fourth quarter. Like, they've been in every single game. They got down this game. They got down 10-0 to Kentucky. Kentucky was looking good. And then all of a sudden, they went to heck in a handbasket, and they're playing their backup quarterback, and they throw a interception near the goal line. That thing's Jarquez Hunter, by the way, just what a stud. I mean, I feel like we don't talk about him as much as we should. I really wish we could, because that dude's an absolute stud, and he's trapped in. But we do know this. We talked about the bottom teams in the SEC. It's not Auburn. Okay, Auburn is not they're not the very bottom. If you got any more questions? Throw them in the chat for us.
Yeah, Big 12. So BYU just keeps, and I think that's one where that's the top of the list for me in terms of, hey, who do I want to go watch and really watch this week? I want to go watch BYU's offense, because they just keep putting points up each and every week. Iowa State.
Can I tell you what you're going to find?
Survived.
Can I tell you what you're going to find?
Okay, what am I going to find?
Very, very physical. 27 LJ Martin is extremely physical, really good back, get stuff when it's not there. And then if you look up, this will probably be one of your favorite things you'll see or you'll hear on this whole podcast. The quarterback's name is like Retzlaff. Okay, so Brent, before the season, Brent Rollins, by the way, works for PFF. Before the season, PFF puts out the top 10, or no, there's 16, I guess, now in the Big 12, 16 teams, maybe more. Yeah,
however many it is.
Okay, however many teams there are in the Big 12. He was dead last. Homeboy held up a picture and put it on social like this and was like, we'll see about this. And that dude
they've thrown
for over 200 yards, I think, every game but one. By the way, you'll love the diversity of their offense, and he's a cool one to watch. He'll take off and scramble. You know, this you saw him this week running a bunch of speed option. Like, they do a bunch of stuff. And the best fake field goal of the season, bar none.
Oh, that was the other thing I was going to ask you. Yes.
That was unbelievable. BYU with the onions. Dude, it was so awesome. The level of detail that I saw from – wow. Say it again. This time, try to slap yourself on the hand. Let's try to use English this time. Kalani Sitake, level of detail in the fake punt, fake field goal. Okay, so he snaps it, and when he snaps it, the guy gets it, the holder gets it, and he throws it between his legs to the kicker running to the right.
Second snap, I saw it.
Yes, okay. The tight end releases on a corner route.
Mm-hmm.
The holder starts to go. Sitake's yelling from the sidelines, if you throw that, I'm going to kill you. He didn't say that, but don't throw it. Don't throw it, because it's wide open. And he's pointing to the first down marker for his kicker, his kicker to run out of bounds. Yeah. Like, because you know, the longer a kicker runs and go gets tackled, it's not going to end well. He's going to cough up the football and he's going to puncture a lung. So, like, it was the level of detail and coaching to that was fantastic. And, you know, it was 7-0, I think, at that point. Like,
yeah.
And they do that. It was the fake field goal of the year. Just unbelievable. It was awesome. It was so cool.
All right. So let's since we last little bit, let's take
college
a look at what we
freaking rocks. Like, college football is the best.
And the way that it's structured now with all of it, like every week, it's week to week. You're going to see new things, see different things. All right. So this is what we did after week five. Here was your – I can't really take the thing off there, so you have to see through it. It's Oregon versus Boise State at the bottom left, and then Tennessee versus Penn State there. Looking at this now, obviously the 8 seed, USC, is no longer the 8 seed.
Can we put the 8 seed in there, by the way?
It was a toss-up between them and one other. It was me, yes. I screwed that up royally. Yeah, this guy, bald
that
guy.
That guy was the USC guy.
They did beat LSU in the beginning and looked different. That was before. Was this before or after Michigan? I think. I can't remember. But anyway, BYU, that looks pretty good.
Yep.
Texas, the one that's missing, Texas A&M's missing, Indiana's missing. Who are you definitively putting in at this point, you think?
Miami. Because I think Miami's going to get him regardless if they lose the AC championship game, and I don't know who's going to challenge them the rest of the way. I mean, I think Miami's definitely looking good, obviously. By the way, Oregon, that was the last top 25 team on their schedule. And even if Oregon loses in the Big Ten championship game, it doesn't matter. They're still in the playoff. So
they still might be right where we have them at five.
Yeah.
Right, at five.
Now, Alabama, I mean, we might.
Maybe.
We might be revisiting that one. We might not be. Clemson's very much be in the mix.
I don't think they're going to end up in a seven. They might be more 8-9 with the two losses now, maybe even 10.
The crazy part's going to be how we handle, like, Iowa State and BYU might get to the Big 12 championship game undefeated, which is kind of crazy. And we're putting both of those in. I mean, there might be a one-loss team, a two-loss team that I know if they played their schedule, they'd have lost at least two, maybe three. And that's part of the committee's thing that they're going to have to deal with. Notre Dame not in this because they lost to NIU. Yep. Notre Dame very much is alive and well and kicking. That Penn State looks pretty good, by the way.
Tennessee.
Brent, what's awesome about this is we got so much more craziness to come. I mean, we're not even close to done.
No, I agree. It's fun to look at just to kind of see periodically where you think, because, and I see projections put out all over the internet, and it's like, it's week to week. It's such a week to week thing soon we'll actually get some actual rankings in there. All right, so here's one. I was put this question on there. What is Indiana and Pitt's ceiling at this point?
I think Indiana's ceiling is the playoff, which is crazy. But I think the way it's unfolded and who they dodge, I think their ceiling is the playoff. I don't think they can win it, but I think Indiana's ceiling is the playoffs. Like they've showed me like what they did to Nebraska. That's a good football team. I'm not saying it's a great football team. That's a really good football team. They're going to play Ohio State. If they somewhat hang with Ohio State, I mean, they're going to be in the playoff. I mean, they're going to have a great chance to be in the playoff. Now let's see if they don't pull an Indiana and go to Michigan State and lose. Like that would be crazy. But that's what I'd say that. And then Pitt, I'm not there yet on Pitt. You might be. I'm not there yet.
I'm definitely not there. Defensively, though, hey, that was impressive. All of that.
My Canes whooped up on some FSU. MB, I hear you, bro, but everybody whipping up on FSU. Like Memphis whipping up on FSU. SMU whipping up on FSU. So I know that. Texas and Texas A&M going to be epic. Yes, you're right about that. Like, that is going to be epic.
I did see some early, like, cost of tickets for that game. Like, unreal, through the roof cost. And I will say, one of the interesting things, you know, where I work with Rivals for Georgia's Rivals site, with them playing Texas last week, did a lot of interaction with the Texas Rivals board. They were very positive with the Georgia fan base. I learned one thing definitively. They hate Texas A&M with a passion. There's nothing more than they hate than people. Texas A&M and Oklahoma, those two fan bases. So Texas and Texas A&M will definitely very much be epic, I guess you could say.
What does the new excuse my Nittany Lions have that they aren't very good? Right. I'm dying to hear. I'm not making any excuses, Kevin.
I was very positive about them. You missed the early discussion.
You missed the first part, so we're going to give you a real quick synopsis. I was uber impressed with this team. I'd like to see Penn State start faster. I'm tired of seeing them start slow, but the defense is as fast as anybody in the country. Playmakers. Ty Warren is elite tight end. They can do a lot of things. And I'm going to say this, Bo Prabula, I might give y'all the best chance to win. And going into Ohio State with your defense, and I really want to make sure that Sutton's okay. I hated that he limped off the field, but that defense can give them problems just like Nebraska did. And we're going to find out everything we need to know about Penn State. At home, Ohio State's got injuries on their offensive line. You got injury on your defensive line at the quarterback spot. But the Nittany Lions, absolutely 100%. A couple weeks ago, people probably would have counted them out. But I think Penn State, everybody's, I think they've got everybody's attention now.
If Aller is like, okay, the combination, I think is probably the way to go. Looking back, just sort of, I guess, summarizing as we go through this, massive win for Texas A&M. They pole position in the SEC now, all alone, only team with an unblemished record in the SEC. And
big day, Oregon, big day for Notre Dame.
Big day for Notre Dame. Oregon separating themselves. Indiana winning with the backup QB and like they did, just the different styles, because it's been through the air with Rourke, and they've dominated on the ground the last 2 weeks. So, great week. Kansas yeah. State, by the way, survives Kansas and which is still in the hunt for the Big 12.
Yep. Kansas State will have a say down the stretch. They'll beat one of those teams that they're not supposed to beat. You know, but I still can't get out of my mind they got beat so almost by 30 to BYU. Like that's the BYU team you're looking at. I like Tyler, and we'll go out with Tyler Belcher. We like yep. you, buddy. Hit the like and subscribe button, everybody. Mm-hmm. We appreciate that, and we just love talking college football, man. This is fun for us. We're not getting paid, like not a dime. This is just because we love the sport, and it's super fun to do. But appreciate y'all joining us. And we'll do the preview show this week a little bit later on the week that comes out Thursday. And everybody have a good rest of their night. I'm going to the pantry. I'm going to go eat. Peace.